I was 9 years old in 1944, in October the 14th, when there was a change of government in Hungary as the regent decided to issue a proclamation and get Hungary out of the war, or attempting to, and the Nazis installed an extreme right-wing government of Szálasi, S-Z-A-L-A-S-I, who was supported by a number of very rabidly racist and extremist organization called the Arrow Cross. And on the day, the 15th of October, when the attempt was made to get Hungary out of the war, we tore off the Star of David, which we wore on our clothes, which had to be worn by law, and removal of which was punishable by either death or deportation, which also meant death. We removed it because we thought the war was over. We were very naive, and we were reported to the Arrow Cross by a laundry maid in the safe house where we lived. The safe house was protected by the neutral governments, and it meant a degree of virtual safety or appearance of safety. But anyway, we were invaded, or I came in from playing in the back garden, and there were half a dozen young 20-year-old ex-party servicemen, they were called. They were actually terrorists with heavily armed machine guns, screaming at my mother, accusing her of breaking the law and removing the Jewish stars, and all those women who removed the Jewish stars and going to take them away. And I begged my mother to keep arguing and saying that we did this because His Excellency the Governor said that the war was over, and they screamed when his name was mentioned because he was regarded as a traitor, and they decided to send us back to the room where we lived. In one of the office rooms was converted into a shelter, because many people lived in this house, which was a hospital really, but it was converted into a refuge for people, the staff and many patients and many relatives of staff. And I was one of those because my mother was working there. And we went back to the room to try to get our clothes and see if we could put the star back. And I remember, still remember this now 70 years later, very vividly, the tremendous anxiety of trying to put back a star which had to be sewn on the clothes, trying to put it back with a safety pin. And it looked ridiculous. We went back and they laughed at us and they rounded us up. He said, all right, all of you come, all the women. There were about 20-odd women, 25, I can't remember the exact number. And I joined, and I said, I'll go with them. And they said, no, we don't want the child. And my mother said, no, you're not coming. And everyone said, I'm not coming. So I went. And we went, and we walked about half a kilometer. This place in Budapest was next to a military arsenal. And we were marched in the gate of that arsenal and lined up in front of a wall, and there were lots and lots of people there. There were army personnel, there were Arrow Cross people, there was a tank, and there were soldiers and people with armbands with Arrow Cross, and you know, it was very threatening. And as we were lined up, one of the women collapsed and fainted, and I said, what's the matter with her? And they said, well, they were debating whether to shoot us now or whether to take us somewhere, perhaps the Danube or is it a barracks called the Maria Theresa Barracks somewhere else. And this was so frightening that this woman collapsed. And then suddenly some civilians appeared, and I was told that that was Wallenberg. And there was they huddled and had a chat and quietly, and then we were suddenly taken back to the hospital. So my life was saved at a critical period. But I must say that in addition to that, and I heard about this later from a friend in Sydney, he was in a condemned cell in that exactly same barracks, and Wallenberg was instrumental in saving him in a different way, and I won't anticipate the story, but he actually met him, and he knew him in a way, whereas to me he was just a magic figure who managed to save us, but I didn't know him personally. And so anyway, we were taken back. And then on another occasion, we were invaded again by the Arrow Cross, And this was at night, early in January 1945, which is about 2 months after the first event. And they were the Arrow Cross with rifles leveled at women and children, threatening most dreadful language, lining up in the basement and deciding to take everybody away. And the director then negotiated with them and asked them to make a selection because they were going to check documents and papers and Schutzpasses and whatever. Anyway, at that point, we were told to get our papers, and of course, we didn't have papers because my mother was on the staff and we were just part of the group living there, but not everyone had papers. And my mother said, no, we won't risk that. We'll hide. And we went up one level to the ground floor and hid in a wardrobe or in a what they call a cupboard where you hold coats, white coats for doctors, a small metal cupboard with holes in the front that you hang your coat in when you're not using it. And we were small people. I was 9 years old that week, and I was a bit more than in 2 months, and my mother was a small blonde lady. And we stood in and shut the door, and we sort of stood there for about 3 hours, and it was bitterly cold. And when we came out, everybody was screaming and wailing because they took 35 people this time, and they took them. And my cousin who was there was absolutely devastated because his mother was picked. Quite a number of my relatives were in that group as well as my teacher. He said, what can we do? And he was told by the director, there's only one man in this city who can help you. Go and see Wallenberg. And they reached him on the telephone. The telephones were still working. This was only about 2 weeks before Budapest was liberated by the Russians. And he went through the city looking for Wallenberg in his flat and found Raoul Wallenberg. And he told him, and they spoke German, ich möchte melden, dass die 30 Leute sind weggenommen bei Terroristen. And the director wishes you to note that this has happened. Can you help? Mm. And Wallenberg went up to my cousin, and my cousin cries when he tells this story 70 years later. He went up to him. He's no longer alive, unfortunately, this man. Raoul went up to him, put his hand on his shoulder and cried with him because my cousin said, my mother is among them. Can you help? Mm. And Raoul said, well, unfortunately, it's too late. The pattern is they take them to their headquarters, they rob them, they brutalize them, take them to the Danube and shoot them. And unfortunately, I can no longer help. They're already looking for me, and I'm sleeping every night in a different house. And my cousin, you know, there's nothing much he could say. He came back, and must have been approximately a 5 or 10 kilometer journey to come back to this house again. Mm. And then the next day, a woman came back, unrecognizable, battered, and the face all swollen and red and dressed in a blanket. And everyone thought she'd gone mad. She was one of the only survivor, and she told the horrible story, which I won't go into because I don't want to create horrible images. But she told in great detail, it is exactly as Raoul said, and the group were executed by these dreadful, unbelievable murderers. All of them, except she fell in the water first and hurt herself on the sand but didn't move. Then they went around and those who were still alive were still shot. And she told this. And later on, many years later, I got this actual transcript from an audio and Hungarian radio where she repeated that story, exactly that story as I remembered it, age 9, and told to the press in the West quite a lot.
I know it's maybe a cynical numbers game, but if you would say people been affected by or saved by Wallenberg who later, for instance, came to Australia, how many descendants do you think are alive today?
You're asking me an impossible question, and I would have to guess, but I would think there were over the period of the latter part of the 20th century, there would have been many thousands actual survivors who came. And if you look at each of them having, let's say, 2 children, and each of those having 2 children, the number who owe their lives or their existence, because they would never have lived if the parents had been killed, must run to several tens of thousands. Mm. I don't know the exact figure, but if you say who had been related or in touch with, it must be about 10,000.
Mm.
That's including people who never knew him and who were born long after. Yeah.
I know that you are very much involved in keeping his memory alive. And sometimes, I mean, it's a personal question, but do you do that also of some kind of, that you owe something to him? Or is, why? Are you, you, because when I see the list here, I see prizes, statues, gardens. It's quite prolific what you're doing in the name of Wallenberg.
What drives me, I think, it's not guilt. It's certainly not guilt. It's a number of things. One is a genuine love for this man, to whom I owe my life. It's a question of justice, I think, second, that he deserved better. Then it's an outrage as to what had happened to us, the Nazi ideology and the genocide and the Shoah, and that there is nothing, unfortunately, we can do to it, that the evil who should be eliminated and exterminated from this earth has not been exterminated, but at least what we can do is honor the other side, honor the righteous, and that's what I do. And it's primarily Raoul and also the other righteous. And the nations who provided the righteous, of which Sweden is one, and also the nations that were able to educate and rear and support such righteous men who recognize the same people as I recognize. So I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does.